Good afternoon. It's 7 minutes past 12. Welcome to the Midday Report. My name is TD Madia, standing in for Mandy Wiener over the next couple of days. Lots and lots going on in the news. We're going to focus our attention on KwaZulu-Natal. I'm hearing that there have already been fatalities reported in Margate. There were reports of flooding overnight. We'll get an update on what's happening there. Could there be a possible JNPD strike looming? We'll speak to Dr. Mthini Chwaku from the city of Joburg to find out what's going on. Of course, the Senzo Meiwa trial resumes in the Pretoria High Court. We'll also speak to our EWN reporters that have been on the ground covering the state of our provinces as South Africans prepare to cast their votes in the upcoming elections. Lots happening in the political space. We'll hear from Rise Mzansi, where Thabiso Gorba is. We'll hear what Julius Malema had to say to audiences in Indonesia. We'll also find out about Trevor Manuel, former finance minister, and his thoughts on the Umkhonto we Sizwe party. That and lots more coming up this hour. You can participate. You can share your thoughts. 072-702-1702 or 072-567-1567 if you want to share your thoughts with us.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
Starting with the story that's unfolding in Margate, inclement weather has been an issue adversely affecting parts of KwaZulu-Natal. This has been the case over recent years. Today, heavy rainfall has left a trail of destruction across parts of Margate. We've seen images of serious damage to roads. Businesses are said to be flooded and residents are experiencing power outages due to the storms. I am hearing about some fatalities as well. Joining us to speak on the story is Boniso Mkati, the spokesperson of Cooperative Governance in KwaZulu-Natal. Mr. Sponiso, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the Midday Report.
Good day and to you and your listeners. Thank you so much for having us.
Let's start with what we are hearing, that there have already been fatalities. Let's start there. Before I even ask about the conditions, let's speak about how many people have been injured and how many fatalities have been discovered thus far.
Yeah, well, for now, we have, our teams are reporting that three people have been confirmed to have passed away. Two of them were in the car that was washed away in the bridge, and one was struck by lightning. So our disaster team are still continuing with the assessment as from the early hours of today, trying to quantify the extent of the damage that were caused by the severe thunderstorm that hit that town last night. So we will continue assessing all the damages and to get the full extent of what exactly, how many properties, public infrastructure that has been damaged, including businesses and households.
Mr. Mkati, as I speak to you now, do we have any idea of whether or not the storm is continuing, whether or not these efforts to try and figure out what's gone wrong, to assess the damage, is happening amidst inclement weather, or has it subsided, allowing for teams to have some level of ease in trying to assess the damage?
Yeah, what I can tell you now, currently the Etchegwini Metro and other areas along the south coast from Etchegwini down to Port Shepstone and Margate, we are currently on alert level 5 of disruptive rains that has been predicted by the South African Weather Service. So there are more rains that are expected, but however, the rain has subsided for now, which is allowing our teams to do some assessment and also businesses and people to do some more pub operations. But there are more rains that are expected until the midnight today, according to the South African Weather Service.
And then are there concerns around low-lying bridges? I know that one of the big issues that always happens when you have such weather is that there are areas with low-lying bridges. I'm not sure if Margate is an area that's characterized by that. Is that the case? Is there concern of cars being washed away in the storms?
Yeah, well, that is something that we're preaching and being with our people and motorists to always try and avoid traveling during a rainy season. But what we've noticed in Margate, we've received the rain of over 150 mm, which is quite a huge amount of rain over a period of the past 24 hours. So obviously no drainage system that could handle that kind of rain. So that is the reason that we ended up seeing the destruction that we experienced in the area of Margate. And we're also worried that it will continue to rain throughout this evening up until midnight. But we are continuing to plead with motorists also try to avoid driving when while it's raining, because it has like cost us so many lives in the past, and we continue to witness such horrific incidents. So we do plead with them to adhere to the weather warnings that we issue from time to time. Even tonight, we are on at level 5 in Etowin and other South Coast areas. So we plead them to take or make precautionary measures to ensure that we save lives during this period.
Mr. Mngadi, you spoke a little bit about the drainage system, saying that no drainage system could actually handle the amount of rain that's fallen in the Margate area. But the drainage system issue in KwaZulu-Natal is not new. In fact, you get criticized quite a lot about what some of the issues become in Durban, at least in eThekwini, has been because of drainage systems. In terms of servicing the systems, how is that working on Cocta's part? How regularly are you trying to make sure that we prevent some of the disaster that we've seen over recent years caused by flooding in the province?
Well, I think that is not entirely correct to blame on the drainage system, because if you look at where the areas where we've suffered most of the damages, in like in Ladysmith, some of the rural areas where you don't even have a drainage, but ordinarily water would flow into the streams and down to the river. So it's not always correct or factually correct to blame on the drainage system. Yes, there is a challenge, but municipalities across the province have been given some funding through the National Disaster Management Fund to upgrade infrastructure such as road, the bridges, including the drainage systems, to assist in terms of managing the water that are coming in huge amount. So it's not entirely the water drainage, the kind of rain that we are receiving. For example, the South African Weather Services yesterday in Margate, they informed us that the town is receiving over 150 mm of rain, which is quite a huge amount. Like today, we are on like alert level 5, and then a rain of over 200 mm is expected. So those kind of rain, it's something that we've never seen in the past years, and they are likely to cause damages. But we're also attending to the issue of drainage systems to ensure that should those rain come, the towns, our towns, are able to handle situation.
And just before I very quickly let you go, Mr. Mngadi, there seems to be confusion. Is it 3 fatalities or is it 4? Just quick clarity from you, please.
Well, the assessments are ongoing, so the information changes now. And then before I came on air, there were 3 that were confirmed. So it might have happened, but I have 3 confirmed at this stage.
All right, thank you so much. That's Mr. Sponiso Mngadi, KZN Cocta spokesperson, speaking about the flooding that's taking place in Margate, and that they're expecting to see a lot more rain over the next couple of hours. I know EWN's Nhlanhla Mabaso, our KwaZulu-Natal correspondent, is on his way to that scene and will definitely be giving you more updates on what's happened overnight and the rescue efforts that are taking place this hour.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
We turn our attention now to the Pretoria High Court, where the trial looking into the murder of Bafana Bafana captain Senzo Meyiwa is back in session following a 3-week recess. That's where we find Eyewitness News' Khumutso Modise. Khumutso, good afternoon and welcome to the show. So the state was leading its case against 5 men standing trial in this matter, I think before you went on a break. Today, if I'm correct, the defense was expected to cross-examine the ballistics expert. Is that what you picked up from today?
Good afternoon, TD. Unfortunately, no. This is the third time that the cross-examination of Lieutenant Colonel Chris Mangena has been deferred. And it's the same reason as the last 2 times, TD. The fact that the defense has not had time or has not had the opportunity to consult with their own ballistic experts in order to capacitate them to cross-examine Mangena. You remember that Mangena was actually the expert that linked the firearm that was found in possession of accused number 3, Ntobi Simube, to the murder of Senzo Meyiwa through the markings on a bullet that was found, a bullet projectile that was found at the home of Kelly Khumalo. Today we were expecting Mangena on the witness stand, and the state advocate George Baloyi Rose to tell the court that the defense has told him that they are waiting for legal aid to fund the fees to consult with the ballistics experts. And, I mean, you know, Judge Ratha Mokgwatleng was not happy about this at all, see. Judge Mokgwatleng speaking about how it's been 8 months since Mangena took the witness stand, 8 months since Mangena gave his evidence to the chief. And it's just unacceptable that the defense has still not had time or has not been able to consult with their own ballistics expert. As a result, the judge has called for the head of legal aid to come into court tomorrow and testify about whether they will be funding the consultation with that private ballistic expert.
The impact of this hiccup, I mean, as you said, the judge is not happy. It's been 8 months since the ballistics experts had testified. What is the impact, though, of this matter? I mean, Khumutso, you know more than anyone. I'm always laughing at Khumutso about the postponements. You know more than anyone how important it is to get to a conclusion of this matter, but how many hiccups have happened along the way in trying to get an answer as to who's responsible for Senzo Meyiwa's death.
Well, what risks happening here, TD, is that, you know, at some point that the court will not hold indefinitely. And if the defense doesn't consult a ballistic expert, one of two things will happen. The court will either compel them to continue and cross-examine Mangina without having consulted with their own expert, or the testimony of Chris Mangina will go unchallenged. And if it goes unchallenged, then the court will accept it as truth that the firearm that was found in possession of Mthobi Simube is the firearm that was used to kill Senzo Meyiwa.
So as you wait for legal aid to return tomorrow, are you expecting anything else to be happening in the court today, or are you adjourned for the rest of the afternoon?
Well, we've been hearing testimony from Sergeant Mukhane. Usmuzi Mukhane is a sergeant that's been working very closely with the investigations team. He's actually part of the cold cases unit, and he's been called back into the stand. Now, it's important to draw a distinction. When Mukhane was brought to the stand initially, it was during the trial within a trial, and he was testifying about the arrest and the detention of accused number two that he was a part of. Now he's been called into the stand to testify about the cell phones that he found, or the cell phones that he was called to collect that belonged, or that we, and that the state alleges belonged to accused number four, and a cell phone that the state believes belonged to accused number two. In terms of versions, TD, accused number two doesn't deny that the cell phone, the Samsung J5, that police have attributed to him actually belongs to him, but he's insinuating that it's been tampered with because he says it was taken from him on the day of his arrest and not days later in a prison cell, as police allege. In terms of accused number four, his lawyers, that's Advocate Mshoko, are completely denying any link between the firearm, or rather the cell phone, TD, that was found in his, that is allegedly found in his possession in prison, and the cell phone that's been presented in court. In fact, now as I walked out, I heard Mr. Mshololo saying, if you didn't take down the serial number, how do we know that the cell phone that you are bringing here to court is actually the cell phone that was found on accused number five?
Thank you so much for that update. That's EWN's Khumutso Modise, who's out of the Pretoria High Court following the trial of Senzo Meyiwa. Let's take a quick break.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
So it's an incredibly busy time. It's like a ridiculously busy time for politicians in our country. I make that argument about being a journalist who covers politics. You don't have much of a life during this kind of period. So what we are seeing is a lot of politicians at rallies. They're doing door-to-door campaigns. They're meeting with different communities. So over the weekend, I went to Lindasia. The EFF was there for a town hall meeting on Saturday. Its leader, Julius Malema, saying they've never been there before, so they believe that they're breaking new ground. They want to visit minority communities and tell them who or what the EFF is, saying that they mustn't get it from the media. I say get it from us, the media. I think we've got a good idea of what the EFF is. But anyway, they'll be meeting with residents at Eldorado Park, and he said that they'll also meet with representatives of the white community. I'd like to see that meeting. Malema also explained the importance of expelled ANC member Carl Niehaus to the EFF in this mission to woo minorities. Take a listen.
And they say, why is Carl so top? Are you questioning democracy? But Carl's top was EFF trying to tell white people, we have no problems with white people. That's why we even vote for them to go to parliament to represent the EFF.
What do you think of that? I mean, think about how many times Julius Malema has clashed with white people over his political views, over his stance, over his chanting. And today he's like, no, that's why we've got Carl so high up on the list. I think Carl Niehaus is number 27 on the EFF's list. So he's certainly headed to Parliament. So Malema speaking about that. Your thoughts on 072-702-1702, 072-072-567-1567. We also heard from Trevor Manuel, another reclusive character as far as politics is concerned. We managed to pin him down to get his thoughts on a few things. He was attending an interfaith prayer in honor of Palestine at the St. George's Cathedral in Cape Town. So we spoke to him about former President Jacob Zuma and the Umkhonto we Sizwe project. Take a listen.
I mean, there have been breakaways. The first breakaway was in 1959 with the formation of the Pan-Africanist Congress. And there have been so many breakaways since. This breakaway is very deliberate in using the name and the symbols of something that's hallowed within the ranks of the African National Congress. Speaks of an abuse. But I think that so much of Jacob Zuma's life is abuse, whether it be the things that he was charged for, like rape, the things that he wasn't charged for but he enabled, like corruption, the way in which he broke down the systems of government, all of it speaks to of an individual who is totally abusive.
That's former Finance Minister Trevor Manuel speaking about former President Jacob Zuma and the Umkhonto we Sizwe party, calling him an abusive individual, you know, who's abusing hallowed symbols of the ANC and the MK while refusing to leave those organizations. What are your thoughts? I think some people make an argument that Trevor Manuel has lost his right to speak on any of these issues because he also walked away from the ANC. He recognizes that this is the most difficult elections the party has faced since the dawn of democracy. I'd like to get your thoughts. 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
So in Johannesburg, keeping with the theme of very busy political parties, Rise Mzansi has been out and about in the Joburg CBD. They've been outlining their plans to tackle crime in Gauteng. I believe at least 1,000 of their supporters were expected to descend upon the city centre together with its premier candidate, Vuyiswa Ramokgopa. This is where EWN's Thabiso Koba is this afternoon. He joins us now on the line. Thabiso, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Sidi.
So the race for the soul of South Africa's economic hub is certainly heating up, with Rise Mzansi also putting its best foot forward. What is the essence of the message they delivered today?
Well, CD, as you said, the Gauteng premier candidate for Rise Mzansi, Vuyiswa Ramokgopa, is the one who outlined the plan for the city in terms of how we can turn around the fortune of this, you know, well, according to Rise Mzansi, used to be one of the countries in opening hub, economic hub. The key message, I think it's in line with the party, from Vuyiswa, that Gauteng will is from the ashes. They believe that Vuyiswa is someone who grew up here in Hillbrook, saying that, you know, she's experienced both sides of Gauteng, growing up and seeing the hope and the dreams and how Gauteng actually, you know, became one of the countries and even Africa's economic hub to what it is now, which is a shadow of its former self. We are right here at Beyers Naudé Square in the central in central Johannesburg. And it's something that, you know, that Rise Mzansi has made reference to, that if you do look around, you'll see a number of abandoned buildings, that these are buildings the way people should be living, where businesses should be at. And, you know, Rise Mzansi is saying that what they plan to do is to make much more investment on local businesses, but also on infrastructure. Now, Vuyiswa Ramokgopa did say that, you know, that the city, or not even the city, but the province, does have to change its priorities, maybe looking less at funding, maybe Amapanyaza, the Gauteng crime wardens, and actually dealing with the issues that affect the people of Gauteng every day. Now, TD, as you know, that Gauteng is one of the swing provinces. in the upcoming elections. The ANC in 2019 won it by 50.19%. So obviously it's one of the provinces that all political parties have a genuine feeling that they could get. And this is something that Mabina Siyape, the national director of Rise Mzansi, spoke to with this news about, saying that they believe that the Gauteng needs new leaders. And this is what he had to say.
The plan that will be presented by our Gauteng Premier Kennedy is for Ramkopa. We'll talk about safety. Safety is important, not just at a personal level, but also when it comes to the economy. People are not going to invest in a province that is unsafe. We're talking about water. The water crisis isn't coming. The water crisis is here. We're going to ensure that we invest in infrastructure, and we're going to ensure that we build new infrastructure, which will in turn create jobs. We're talking about putting solar panels on every rooftop, which is not only just talk about energy itself. It's also about creating jobs. Gauteng is dirty. We want to ensure that the province is clean. People of Gauteng are unemployed. We want to make sure that there are jobs. And we're not saying that these will be done overnight. It's going to take at least a generation to ensure that the people...
That's Rise Mzansi's communications director, Mabina Siyabe. You're speaking to Tabiso Gorba out in the Joburg CBD, where Rise Mzansi is putting forward a plan to deal with crime, putting forward a plan to invest in abandoned buildings and bring life back to the Joburg CBD.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 12:36. You're still listening to the Midday Report. My name is TD Madia, standing in for Mandy Wiener. Our focus now will be on EWN and its political, its provincial features, rather. EWN's team has been traversing the length and breadth of our country, speaking to citizens, feeling the pulse of the so-called Rainbow Nation as we prepare for the 7th democratic elections, which take place next month. Alpha Ramoshwana and Jacques Nellis on multimedia spent a week or so in Mpumalanga, where I think they've uncovered many stories. In Ermelo, they spoke about how Nyaupe is ruining the lives of young people. They spoke of illegal coal mining, the notorious Moloto Road, and the devastation that still comes from accidents there. And they also went to an area called Bukenhout Hoek. Never heard of it. Near Kwamhlanga, they found residents there mining for precious stones in their backyards. Before I even play the report, I want to bring Alpha Ramoshwana in. He joins me now in studio. Alpha, good afternoon. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon, TD. Thank you for having me.
Let's speak about what Mpumalanga was like for you at a glance. What stands out for you? I do know you said to Bongani Bingo earlier that unemployment really is the theme of Mpumalanga.
Yes. So in Mpumalanga, really most of the stories that we covered are all centered around unemployment and basically highlighted the things that people are willing to do just to put food on the table. You know, we started off in Bukenhout Hoek, a village just close to Moloto Road in Kwamhlanga. And there, TD, employment opportunities are very rare, very scarce. And, you know, I spoke to a young man there who did a business management course at the Tshwane TVET College. And he says he's graduated, he's got his diploma from the Tshwane TVET College, but he's still unemployed. So he's decided that the only way to make money, the only way to feed his family is to go back home, dig tunnels, dig trenches in his backyard, dig tunnels just beneath his home and extract the gemstones that lie under, you know, his home. And he figured that selling the stones that are under his home that he finds from digging these trenches is the only way to feed his family until he finds formal employment. So really everything around Mpumalanga is centered around employment. 30 years into democracy, it's things that in all parts of the province, residents are crying about one thing, that as long as we don't have employment, we're going to use the minerals that we have in Mpumalanga. This similar scenes played out in Ermelo, where, you know, unemployed young people who are also graduates are illegally mining coal. You know, they are extracting that coal from an abundant mine shaft and they sell it to community members, and a sack goes for 70 rand. And the 70 rand they get from that sack is the money that they take back home to feed their family. They take back home. Some of them say they've managed to build homes for their families with, you know, the money they make from illegally mining the coal.
Let's speak about the gems that you found. I think you and I had a slight disagreement about what that gems the gems actually are and what they look like. Even the name, I wasn't convinced that it's called, is it a spirit quartz that
spirit
you said it was?
Crystal.
Tell me what it looks like a little bit, please.
Immediately after it's extracted, you'd wonder, why are they mining this? It looks ugly. But the moment they clean it, the moment they take it for cleaning, it becomes so shiny. You know, you can find it in purple, you can find it in blue, dark black. There's a variety of spirits crystals. And depending on the variety or the type of gemstone it is, you can sell it for as little as 700 rand. It can go up to 4,000 rand depending on the type of stone that you find. But from my understanding, from the research that I've done, it's called spirit quartz crystal. And research is showing that it's only found in the southern parts of Africa. So in southern Africa, basically.
Very interesting. Take a listen to Alpha's report and this digging that's taking place in Mpumalanga, where residents without employment opportunities are relying on these quartz crystals to put food on their tables for their families.
A poverty-stricken village, suffering from the shackles of unemployment. A place where even the educated on the outskirts of Molodi Road have turned their homes into crystal mines. And driving around the village is an odd reminder of Limpopo's Atok village, with tunnels visibly dug up in people's homes and along the bumpy gravel roads. Eyewitness News is welcomed into one of the homes, where boxes of beer are filled with spirit quartz crystals, a shiny, colorful, and valuable gemstone. A resident who obtained a business management diploma at the Tshwane TVET College in 2018 crawls into a tunnel and explains that this is his bread and butter.
After I graduated, I stayed home because I was jobless. I realized that my only solution would be finding something to do while I job hunt. That's when I started digging in the backyard and making ends meet by selling these crystals.
A few moments later, a 23-year-old resident crawls out of another narrow tunnel with his face and clothes coated in sand. But he says finding formal employment is not on his bucket list, as he boasts about the thousands he makes weekly.
Many people have never seen or held 30,000 rand in cash, but I have. I know I look dirty, but I sleep well at night knowing I'm providing for my family.
He refuses to be labeled as Zamazama.
It really hurts that some see me as an illegal miner or even a fool. The money I make from this supports many families.
He proudly tells Eyewitness News that he's managed to extend his family home thanks to proceeds made from selling the crystal. Alpha Ramshwana, Eyewitness News, Bukenhoutuk in Mpumalanga.
That's Alpha Ramshwana, as you've heard there, in Bukenhoutuk, outside of Kwamhlanga, a village in Mpumalanga, where people are desperately looking for ways to put food on their tables. 30 years, he said, into democracy, and the theme that stands out from being in Mpumalanga, speaking to residents from the dire situation of the young people who've left their families, lost their loved ones to Nyaope, to these ones who are digging for these crystal gems in their homes, to the ones who are digging illegally in coal mines. Everything about Mpumalanga speaks to unemployment. I can tell you that if I look at the other stories we've covered in other provinces, that's the case across the board. If you go to Free State, young, educated, unemployed. Northwest, same thing. Limpopo, same thing. That is the theme. Even here in urban Gauteng, the frustrations, by and large, are rooted in a lack of opportunities and a lack of employment opportunities at that. What are your thoughts 30 years into democracy when you're hearing these kind of stories and our South Africans have to be creative to put food on the table, to survive this kind of economy? What comes to mind? 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567. I think there's a few more provinces left to go, and we'll also bring those to you on the midday report.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Last week, you might have seen reports, I think on News 24, of Nazi Spani participants who have gone for months without pay, at least since they started, it said. I know there was an answer from the Premier saying there was a glitch that particular month, but it seems some are not convinced by that argument. Today, Funzi Ngobeni and Team Fix SA from Action SA, Mpumi Edward, are approaching the Public Service Commission, handing over complaints about the program. Funzi Ngobeni joins me now on the line. We talk to him now. Good afternoon, Mr. Ngobeni. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Good afternoon, Sidi, and good afternoon to the listeners of 702.
Action SA has long taken a dim view against this particular initiative. Some will argue a very important initiative, but some will claim it exists purely for politicking ahead of the elections. Your take on the current challenges facing Nazi Spani?
Yeah, no, I mean, we have been quite clear from the beginning, Sidi, that it is a political campaign. Here we see a premier of the ANC using this campaign towards their election campaign and not using the resources of the party, but using the resources of taxpayers. And now it's even going well in that they have promised young people jobs, which they've given to them, yes, but now they have to pay them. And they are not; they've not been paying them for the last 2 or 3 months. So that is why we thought it's important that we take the matter up, you know, on behalf of these young employees. They have approached us, some of them, to say they are being victimized for, you know, taking the matter to the media, and they've asked us to champion the matter for them, and that's what we are doing. So we dropped a memo with the Public Service Commission, and you will know that the Public Service Commission is empowered by Section 196 of the Constitution to basically investigate grievances of employees of such nature. And we hope that they will go to the bottom of it and get answers, particularly for these young people who are now, you know, going to work but not being paid.
Before I move on, talk me through the claims of being victimized for going to the media. What stories is Action SA hearing from these participants about making sure that their plight and inability to get their salaries, their payments are being used against them? And by who? Mm.
Yeah, and they are saying to us, I mean, going to the media was the last resort. They have been trying to get answers from the department. And every time, you know, when they do so, they are met with vague explanations, you know, and people shifting timelines and saying, no, it will come this month, and it doesn't come. And they eventually, you know, went to the media, and I'm sure you have seen some of them on TV shows like Checkpoint, and some have also, you know, done some videos on social media. And we've managed to locate a few of them that were willing to talk to us, and, you know, obviously, you know, they did so in confidence, and we promised that we will not put their livelihoods at harm's way. So we decided that, you know, let's take these matters forward. And they are saying even people that that were on those shows at CD, that were on Checkpoint and so forth, although, you know, their names and faces somehow were hidden, but they are currently experiencing problems and being victimized within the department, which is really, really unfair. I mean, all that they wanted to do was to highlight the issue that they are having, having tried to engage with the department and not getting answers. Now they decided to look at other avenues, and instead of paying them, they are victimizing them. You know, that's really injustice. So we are taking this matter on their behalf. We are engaging the PSC. We are glad that the commissioner was also aware of this matter. You know, what was surprising is that when we got to the offices, you know, some of the employees were telling us that, yo, we are getting so many of these Nazi Spani queries. We don't know what is happening, you know, and we hope that you guys will get to the bottom of this. So that's what we are doing, and we hope that we'll get the answers.
Just very quickly, outside of the PSC, are there any other avenues that Action SA is exploring to help the participants of Nazi Spani who feel hard done by the program and victimized even?
For now, CD, we're going to focus on this one. And we have previously written letters to the legislature, the provincial legislature, and we have tried to, you know, also send some signals to the Premier. but that has not helped us. You know, so we cannot get tired of this. We are now trying an avenue of the PSC as a constitutional body that needs to do its work, and we're going to follow up with them. So they have promised us that they'll get back to us within a few days. They're going to look into the merit of the case. They're going to engage the department, and they will get back to us. At this moment, what we are interested on is this individual is getting what is due to them. We know that Nasispan is a political gimmick, is a political campaign, but there are individuals that have benefited from this who are hoping to put food on the table at this moment, and we need to protect them. And we need to defend you know, their rights as well. So that is what we are going to do.
All right, thank you so much. That's Action SA's Gauteng Premier Candidate Fulzi Ngobeni speaking about Nasispani. Lots of complaints being raised about it. What have you heard? What are your thoughts? He says that they're receiving a lot of complaints, and amongst those complaints, that people say that they're also being victimized for coming to the media. The media is a last resort. We've heard about the complaints. I don't know if you've seen the article. I think I saw it in the News 24 that some, since joining the program back in February, have not been paid at all, received no salaries. Some now being kicked out of the area, their residence. Some of them can't pay rent, some can't pay fees, and the adverse impact really on a lot of young people. By a program, from my understanding, is aimed to do well, is aimed to help with the issue of unemployment, because whatever you say about Nasispani, whatever you do, the issue of youth unemployment remains very much a part of the South African problem that we must navigate.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
If you try to access the Daily Maverick today, you'll realize that it's actually shut down. It's shut down today to highlight the global state of emergency in journalism, which it says is experiencing a market failure and is at risk of collapse. Earlier, my colleague Bongani Pingwa spoke to Daily Maverick CEO Stanley Charalambos, I think if I got it right. And they spoke about the reason behind this and why Daily Maverick would risk its 10 million monthly users in order to make this particular statement. Take a listen.
But the business model has been severely disrupted. And so the industry has gone from being primarily driven by advertising revenue, and that has shifted in the migration to digital, and the economics no longer work to be able to support and sustain newsrooms of our size. And so what we've seen happen as a result of that is that newsrooms around the country have been shutting down. Before COVID, there was a report that that said we've lost about half of our newsroom media workforce since Daily Maverick started in 2009. That's obviously been made worse by COVID. We estimate another 20% of our colleagues have lost or left the industry as a result of these economics and the business model that can no longer sustain that. And so we are now definitely in crisis mode, even though we have pockets of growth, pockets of excellence and pockets of sustainability. But those are few and far between in amongst the news deserts that are now springing up all over the country.
In the era of fake news and post-truth, there are some people who are cynical and don't necessarily trust journalism. Why is it important for us to make sure we protect particularly public interest journalism?
Yeah, you know, part of that democratization that I was talking about is that now everyone is a broadcaster, everyone is able to go and air their views online, which is great. But also with that means there's a flood of stuff which comes out, which is unverified, untested, doesn't go through a professional process of checking, of sourcing, of editing, having a second and third set of eyes on information that goes out. And also to do the hard work. Bongani, you know, we have lots of people sitting at home on their phones, on their laptops, and just commenting and sharing their opinions, as opposed to what journalists do, which is to go out into the streets, you know, have boots on the ground, going out, speaking to people, scouring through documents and information and verifying. And so I think as more and more information, mis- and disinformation comes into that space and clouds what is the truth and what is as close to the truth and reality as possible, we need more journalists doing that hard work of being a public service to society. It helps protect democracy. It helps people make better decisions, more informed decisions. We're going into an election now. And I just think about all the hard work that we've done around investigations, interrogating manifestos, asking tough questions, creating opportunities to go deep on topics that normally wouldn't go beyond a 1 minute TikTok video, for example. And so those are all the reasons we need journalism and we need more journalists. And unfortunately, the trend is going the other way.
I cannot echo his sentiments enough. We need journalism. Every time somebody says to you, oh, what mainstream media won't tell you, often it's taken from mainstream media, hardworking people behind the scenes putting those stories out there for you. Other stories to look out for that are happening today, former ANC Secretary General, ex-ANC Secretary General, Ace Magashule and his co-accused appeared in the Bloemfontein High Court over corruption allegations linked to the asbestos roofs project. That case has been postponed until the 14th of June. It is trial time. And then this afternoon in Ekurhuleni, new MMCs will be appointed and sworn in. Remember, Dr. Thakaza was elected mayor last week.
Because this journey is better taken together.
Let's walk the talk. 702.
Hi, CD. I would like to talk about Ace Magashule. When he formed a political party, I thought he was more powerful, influential, and famous. But I was wrong. I think he must just swallow his pride and avoid further embarrassment by quitting politics or join MK. Because I don't think he will even get one seat in nationally. Thank you. Peter Maila Machaba from Letswana.
Good afternoon, Sidi. But Julius Malema never said that he hates white people. I think we need to understand politics as it is. We understand white people and also white supremacy. We understand if we talk about the decolonization of education and understanding and mentality, we need to understand that. He never said that he hates white people, but he hates white supremacy, of which all of us subscribe to them. So I think we need to make a difference in that space or Richard's Bay.
Good afternoon, TD and 702 Landers. I could not agree more than what Trevor Manuel has said. Zuma is abusive, very abusive. And you know what he's doing is just wrong. It's just wrong, completely wrong. So whoever votes for him, you know what, it's up to them. It's a democracy world. But it's wrong. It's just wrong.
Thank you so much for all your voice notes. Just two very, very quick points. Peter, on Ace Magashule, I think you've got a point. I realize he wasn't as politically strong as we're made to believe he was in his downfall. I think if he was as strong and strategic as he was, he would have handled it much far better. As far as Julius Malema is concerned, Sfiso in Richards Bay, I don't think I've ever said he hates white people. I said there's always been this back and forth and this understanding about what he says and what his chants mean. But I absolutely agree with you. I don't think he's ever said that. He hangs up with them way too much to say that. Thank you for your voice notes. Keep them coming.
Sports Wrap.
Sports Wrap.
On 702 and Cape Talk.
We joined in studio now by Mawande Mateza to speak about the sports. All I know is that Pirates might possibly one day face Sundowns. And I think Cindy said there'll be lessons to give Pirates. That's all I know about sports at the moment.
Good afternoon, Cindy. Yeah, that's possibly in the Nedbank Cup final that's happening on the 1st of June. We had the quarterfinals this past weekend. And with Pirates, Sundowns making it through, as well as Stellenbosch and Chippa United, they'll be in the semifinals. However, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Pirates and Sundowns will meet in that final. Okay. I know they're the highly fancied sides, but Sundowns, for instance, in the semis will face Stellenbosch FC, and Stellenbosch FC are currently 21 matches unbeaten in all competitions. So it's not going to be easy. And I think it's one thing that Coach Steve Barker has said about Stellenbosch is that they probably deserve a lot more credit than they have been getting from South African football in general for what they have achieved this season. So yeah, just don't put it in your mind yet that Sundowns are playing.
And then let's talk about the Premier League.
Yeah, we had the biggest twist in the Premier League title race this week and yesterday, just in fact, with Arsenal and Liverpool both losing their games. They were the top two going into the weekend, and now Manchester City are the new leaders, 2 points ahead of both of them with 6 games to go in the season. And the thing is about that is Man City lost a game in December 2023. They are not going to lose, highly unlikely that they're going to lose in the next 6 games. They just don't drop points at this stage. They are absolutely ruthless and clinical. And you saw that in the 5-1 win against Luton Town at the weekend as well. So I think Manchester City, besides the fact that they have the advantage, they've probably got one hand on the cup already.
For some strange reason, I remember the loss in December 2023.
Yeah.
I think their fans here took it really hard. Anyway, speak to me about the tennis. And just before we finish the golf, the Masters and the golf.
Yeah. We had Stefanos Tsitsipas winning the Monte Carlo Masters, the third time that he's done that in his career. He's one of only 5 players who've ever done that in the history who've won 3 or more Monte Carlo Masters titles. And the thing about Tsitsipas is that he flatters to deceive. He always starts the clay court season very well, but peters out towards the end and never quite makes it to, you know, I know he made the final in 2021 at Roland Garros, but it's one of those, you want to get excited about him and you want to think that maybe this is his year, and you're holding on and crossing fingers and holding thumbs that this will be his year. Yeah.
Is that about it? That's a wrap for now. Thank you so much. That's my one day, Mateza, giving us this weekend sports wrap. I'm crossing fingers for Pirates and Sundowns meeting. Crossing fingers, because I think I'll enjoy that match. It's 1 o'clock. Thank you so much for joining us. That's it for me. Here's your eyewitness news update.